Thank you so much for being here tonight for our central plenary, Overcoming Oppression and Building Inclusion in the Democracy Movement. We also have a fantastic concert coming up tomorrow evening. Emma's Revolution, who is here for our welcome. They are having a concert at the Pipe Fitter Local 539. Over there on campus and university, we're going to be doing some carpooling over there. So if you happen to have a car and you're willing to be a part of that carpool to the party, let Dotson know when you're coming. Let her know sometime tomorrow, and we're all going to meet over at Wiley over here and make our way over to the Union Hall to have a little fun together, unwind, and listen to some music. I'm sure everybody's ready for that, right? If anyone can volunteer as well to help set up for that concert or tear down, that would be fantastic as well. So before we get started with our speakers, and we have a fantastic panel of speakers this evening, let's just give it up for them for taking the time to come out. Now before we do that, I would like to share our statement from the conveners about overcoming oppression and building inclusion within our movement. And while I read this statement, because it's very succinct and it includes everything that we want to talk about this evening, I would actually like you to kind of close your eyes while I read this so you can start to envision and really think about what it is we're saying with this statement. And the speakers are going to be elaborating on what we're talking about here. And then after they speak, we're going to break off into some small groups and talk about some of the questions that come up from the knowledge that they're going to be giving us tonight. So close your eyes. I'm going to read the statement now. Our purpose is to build a truly inclusive democracy movement, one that takes on oppression in order to finally overcome it, in order to build a truly democratic society. Overcoming oppression involves building strong community and collective power. Community power begins with creating what Dr. King called the beloved community, something we are doing now with the Democracy Convention, something every one of you are doing actively each day that you participated in this. Inclusive democracy is anything but power neutral. We include in order to democratize. An inclusive democracy movement builds new institutions, cultures, and systems based on equity and direct resistance to oppressions, with the leadership and participation of those most directly affected by those oppressions. Therefore, we also exclude. We exclude and confront white supremacy and racism, nationalism and xenophobia, patriarchy and sexism, class rule and elitism, cisnormativity and homophobia, ableism, ageism, and anthropocentrism, and other structures and expressions of domination. Each oppression denies self-government, collective liberation, and full personhood. Each reinforces capitalism, a system that turns living and free beings into things for sale and consumption. The goal of the movement we are building is to overcome, not just regulate, oppression. We are outward-oriented and globally aware. We are always thinking about who is struggling for liberation, and we seek social transformation and a democratic revolution. Yeah. And to that end, we have compiled this fantastic panel of speakers, the first of which has taken time out of his birthday to actually come and celebrate with us. So I hope everybody gives him a very warm welcome. That is Representative Keith Ellison.
Happy birthday to you.
decade. He also serves as the deputy chair of the Democratic National Committee. And we are incredibly excited to have him here this evening. So I'm going to welcome him up.
And I also want to thank my fellow panelists for being here. You guys are awesome. Welcome to the Twin Cities.
Yeah.
It's good to see you guys. Now look. When you get such a wonderful gift as I just got, you got to show it off. Is that all right with you?
Yeah.
So, like, these are... We will all handle these things appropriately. So, allow me to start this way. You start out in 1954 by saying nigger, nigger, nigger. By 1968, you can't say nigger. That hurts you. Backfires. So you say stuff like forced busing, states' rights, and all that stuff. You're getting so abstract now that you're talking about cutting taxes, and all these things you're talking about are totally economic things, and a byproduct of them is that blacks get hurt worse than whites. And subconsciously, maybe that's part of it, but I'm not saying that. I'm saying that it is getting that abstract and that coded that we're now doing away with the racial problem one way or another. You follow me? Because nobody's sitting around saying, we want to cut this. It's much more abstract even than the busing thing, and a hell of a lot more abstract than nigger, nigger. Mm-hmm. Now, has anybody heard that before? Raise your hand if you heard it. That is a statement by a man named Lee Atwater. But see, look, I don't want you to think like Lee Atwater, he's a bad guy. See, he said the N-word, how bad is that? It's much more about the game that he plays on all of us that he didn't come up with. That you must understand, Donald Trump is by no means anything more than one individual parroting a very long tradition. Donald Trump is a symptom of a very serious problem that the American left, I believe, has the only real solution to solve. Because who else is going to say in a full-throated, clear-eyed way that not only is racism morally wrong, not only does it hurt people of color, it actually really hurts working-class white people too, and always has. And that's really kind of one of the main purposes of it. Why should a working class white person in Alabama in 1850 contemplate picking up arms for the SOB who owns the plantation? Why should he do that? How does that make sense for him? You're getting paid less because the people you're competing with don't get paid at all. You are getting treated bad because there ain't no labor standards to be calling for. You're getting the total shaft, but you believe that somehow your interests are aligned with the guy in the big house, which you can't even go into.
That's right.
And you got a beef with this guy standing there chopping cotton just like you, or sugar cane, or you name it. That's who you don't like. Because they gave you this much more gruel to eat than him. And way more than her. This is the problem of 2017. Who is going to help American people understand that racism, sexism, all these isms are fundamentally a tool to maintain a certain hierarchical social order? Because a lot of us just want to wish racism away. But of course, this potent ain't going to be wished away. You have got to take it on in a full-throated way. You've got to grab it by the neck and drown it. You've got to kill it. And who's going to do it but you? Because other people they don't even understand what Lee Atwater is trying to say to them. That when you say lower my taxes, that is coded, abstract, race-based language. They know it. We all kind of know it. But who is going to confront it? And who is going to deal with it? So that we can really bring forth true human solidarity. That's what we've got to be fighting for. But we can't just skip to solidarity because we have too much inequity as a result of historic oppression. So who then is going to say, in order to heal a dirty wound, you have to first clean it? Well, I believe you will do that. And so it's critically important that you're gathered today on this beautiful Friday night in one of the last warm days we're going to be having in Minnesota. Y'all know in about a month from now it's going to be getting cold, right? So whatever, you're taking one of these precious few days to dig in around what I believe is the most critical issue. You can't even begin to understand income inequality until you understand racism. And by the way, every ism, and I talked about anti-black racism, I could have been talking about the Chinese Exclusion Act and Vincent Chin. I could have been talking about anti-immigrant, anti-Latino stuff. I could be talking about any range of isms as our introducer laid out when we first began this conversation. Human solidarity is the key. Acknowledging that this society has privileged some and disadvantaged others in order to divide both. And if we will confront that, we can fix that. But if we don't confront that, we are, I believe, in very tough shape. We in America, many of us are under the impression that, hey man, this is America, you know, it's just, you know, Trump's gonna, you know, he's gonna lose in the midterms, and then, you know, he's gonna be out in 2020, and everything's gonna be maybe not awesome, but better, but back to normal. Many societies that have representative democracies have gone straight out fascist. Many have. We can name examples of them. And there is nothing stopping this society from doing the same thing unless the people who love this country and are standing up for the values of it are willing to stand up right now. This is key. Thank you. And I know many of you and me have criticized our country, and it deserves to be. Nobody's going to get up and say that ain't true. Some young lady just explained to me we are on Sisseton land right now, indigenous people's land right now. She just mentioned that. And guess what? It didn't cease to be Sisseton land because the Sisseton said, you know, y'all need some land to have our. It didn't go quite that way. They said, you know, black folks, we got to build this country up. We need some workers. Y'all want to come over here and help us out? No, they didn't do what? That's not the story of what happened. But I would submit to you that there's probably no country on this earth that I'm aware of that hasn't had slavery, displacement of people, abuse of land and resources. I mean, there's no perfect place, man. So you might as well stand here and fight right here and make this one better. Might as well make this one better. So I want to say to you that this moment that we're in right now, I really do believe is very serious. It is a moment in which it's important to take stock of not just the latest tweet, but and it's critically important that you don't just dismiss this as incompetence or chaotic bad leadership. No, in fact, what you see happening before your eyes is systematic destruction of every institution designed to stop a certain mentality from taking over everything. When he says fake news and attacks the press and says no cameras,
yes,
and then goes over, and then I'm for social media. Follow me on Twitter at Keith Ellison. But when he goes around, but when he attacks the press and then uses the Twitter feed in order to simply convince people that the press is not legitimate, what he's really doing is attacking an institution that is designed to put sunlight on government corruption and abuse. And that's the press. That's why the Congress shall make no law abridging the press. That's the purpose of it. Now, the fact that the press does not live up to its constitutional responsibility is another question. And that has to do with something I want to talk about in a moment. which is concentration of markets. But that's another issue. So that's the press over there. Even Congress, you all might think, oh, Lisa Murkowski's not so hot. I got peace with her. You know, Senator Snow, I'm not so hot with her. And McCain, yeah, so he did one thing. Let me tell you, this is not the issue. The fact that he goes online and attacks them means that he's willing to persecute people for representing the will of their constituents. That's another institution, the Congress, which is supposed to be representative of the people, which he is willing to attack and undermine, belittle, and move aside. Now, if there's the least sympathetic person who I've been sympathetic to over the last week is this Jeff Sessions. What a horrible guy, right? So racist. So racist, he couldn't even be confirmed as a judge. So racist. But when you see Trump kicking his butt, it's like, wow, what'd he do? Well, what he did is he refused through his recusal to help Trump engage in obstruction of justice. So I used to be a criminal defense lawyer for like 17 years. How many times have I seen two guys say, look, you know, we both were selling dope together, and if you bet on me, you know, you're going to be sorry, man. You know what they used to say, remind me what they used to say, snitches get stitches, right? And that's what's going on. Snitches get stitches. That's what's going on with Trump and Sessions right now. There's no integrity here, okay? Snitches get stitches. That's basically what's going on. You rat me out. You know. That's what's going on. So the press under attack, Congress under attack, the institutions of justice and accountability under attack. And we can keep on marching down the line. The racism that you see now has everything to do with what I shared with you here. They're simply trying to appeal to working class white people and say, you're special. You're the special darling. You know, I might be a billionaire, and if you come on Mar-a-Lago, other than to cut the grass, I will have you arrested. White skin and all. Yet, we're together, right, against them. That is the only way he can keep us from uniting to take over Mar-a-Lago and turn it into a school or something. Which would be a pretty good use of it, I think so. Get rid of all the damn pesticides he uses to keep it like that. My point is that this is the moment that we're in, and every single institution that you see that is designed to create checks and balances and stop a dictator and authoritarian from ruling simply by his whim is under attack. Our primary challenge is to not see ourselves in silo movements. You might be here because you're outraged by mass incarceration. Well, what does mass incarceration have to do with corruption in government and money in politics? Well, it turns out quite a bit.
Yep, say that.
And if you will dig into it, you will see how your efforts and someone else's efforts to get true public campaign finance are actually united. If you're willing to say, look, we're standing up for the environment. We are here to stand up and demand climate action. You understand that fight and the fight to take on and dismantle monopoly is essential. Because how come we're not taking on ExxonMobil? Well, it turns out to be a part of a monopoly. But Chevron, ExxonMobil, BP, there ain't too many of them. That's what a monopoly is. And they use their money to rent politicians who take no action on climate, as our world is getting unlivable for human habitation. So it's critical, and this has to do with what I believe we need to do, to come to meetings like this and to understand how fundamentally important it is for us to deconstruct the silos that we live in every day. This doesn't mean stop working on housing if your house is housing. Work on housing. We need you to work on housing. But also understand how housing is related to the banking monopolies that don't want there to be adequate housing for working people. And to the healthcare monopolies that want to be able to monetize your illness and your sickness and resent the idea deeply that you could just go to the doctor when you're sick. Or what about this before you're sick? Prevention. How about that, Doc? Wait. You're a physician, right? Prevention's a good thing. Thumbs up on that. So this is why, in this moment, when I believe things are dire, it is important for an idealistic, downright unreasonable group of people to demand in America a country that truly affirms human dignity. Yeah. That's why we gotta all be for some single payer healthcare. Now you might say, well, we saw you voting not to, against the repeal. You damn right you did. Because half of those better than none. And if you can go to the doctor where before you couldn't, I'm all for that. I got constituents that I got to represent. I've had some people say, oh, so what? So what? It's just a capitalist accommodation. I'm like, you know, you go tell that to somebody who had no shot at getting their diabetes dealt with. You're in a luxury space. You know what I mean? Now, we got to be for single payer because single payer uplifts human dignity. Yes, it saves money. Yes, it's rational. Yes, it's all those things. But it elevates human dignity, and that's my reason. And I ask you, really, to make the moral argument first. If you don't, who's going to? We have got to invest in infrastructure in this country. Yes, it gives good, well-paying jobs. Absolutely, it is important to have 21st century infrastructure, high speed. We got to electrify all the rural areas and make sure everywhere is wired and connected. And we got to make sure that our public airwaves are not taken over by the big ISP monopolies. But mostly, we got to do it because when you don't invest in infrastructure, the bridge falls down. 11 years ago, 13 people got killed because we neglected maintenance on that bridge. You can walk there from here easily. And people are getting killed because of failing infrastructure all over this country. And we have not made any major investments in infrastructure since Eisenhower. But let's get at it. We absolutely must have a massive voter education and voter rights movement in this country. 32 states have photo ID laws, and now even the Supreme Court admits that photo ID laws do nothing to promote voter integrity. In fact, they do one thing, they exclude people from voting. Guess what? That's the point. That's like the point of it, right? And so I'm gonna wrap. I just got to know that I got 5 more minutes or less to go, so I do want to say this about dismantling the napkin. There's a lot more to be said, but I gotta say this because I want you to put on your list of things that you talk about attacking the monopoly. If you go get a beer tonight after here, there's basically gonna be 2 distribution companies that'll bring it to you, just 2. Mm-hmm. If you get a hamburger, 3. Chicken, 4. ISP, internet service provider, 4. Banks, I don't know, no more than 5. When you concentrate markets, what you do is you say to the employee, you can't go to this guy's treatment bay, you can't go to that guy, because guess what, they're the same guy. They had lunch at the country club this morning. You think they're going to pay you more? They ain't paying you more. If you're an innovator, entrepreneur, you come up with some great new idea that people really like, they'll just buy the patent and buy you out, give you your millions, and just chuck it. The electric car's not a new idea. It ain't no new idea. It's bad, but you know, you want to open up a little store, a little shop, you know, try opening it up next to Walmart, see how that works out for you. We've got to attack it. And then they take all their monopoly profits. They attack workers' rights, they attack consumer rights, they attack the environment, they attack everything, and then what they do is they buy politicians that protect it all. I'm telling you, Evan, we haven't done real antitrust since Franklin Roosevelt. And you want to know why is it that there are all these things, whether it's legalization of marijuana, whether it's legalization of same-sex marriage, all these things, you know, the American people say to pollsters that they are for, and yet we can't get any of them done. 89% of people say there ought to be some kind of a criminal violent background check for people who they want to go get a handgun. Even the gun owners say, yeah, that makes sense to me, and we can't do it. Why can't we do it? Because we have concentrated markets, and concentrated politics as a result. And because of that, you and I have got to make this a key issue and attack it. This guy who is the chair of the FCC, we have got to say, is absolutely operating contrary to the public interest. Just like we stopped them, even though they're the House of both houses in the presidency, we stopped them from wrecking the Affordable Care Act. We got to stop them from wrecking net neutrality law. This is really important. So let me just wrap up right now, because I've talked longer than I'm supposed to. I just want to let you all know that we are in a critical moment in our nation's history. No one in this room remembers all these institutions being under attack quite this way. Let me tell you, the easiest part of solving any problem is figuring I was wrong. Many of us in this room, anybody can explain the problems. But the real challenge in solving any problem is coming up with a solution. I believe, and the reason I ran for the chair of the Democratic Party and serving as deputy chair, that every party, I don't care which party you're in, must be all about engaging the grassroots, building community and relationship with Americans all over this country. Our main goal has got to be to make sure there's not one door, not one family, not one household, not one community that is not fully engaged, empowered, and informed in order to determine the destiny of their family, their community, their country. The politics we live in right now are all about exclusion. 15 states, and time to shut up, y'all.
I'll take my time.
I just want to finish my thought. Here's just a little thing about the last election and presidential election. You know that 99% of all the presidential visits of the Democratic Party candidate were in 15 states. They forgot Wisconsin was a state.
Sure did.
Never showed up.
Speak on that.
Never showed up. Didn't show up in Michigan till late. Never came to Minnesota. We only won by 1.6%. This is because over the course of many, many years, we have said to ourselves, we're not going to talk to every state. We're just going to talk to the battleground states. We're not going to just talk to the battleground states. We're going to go to those battleground states, to the battleground counties. We're only going to... In fact, we don't see politics as engaging community. We see politics as just doing the little as we can just to win. And not engaging people. Because when you engage people, people come with their own opinions. People got views. You go knock on Miss McGillicuddy's door, she might tell you she wants you to actually raise the damn minimum wage. So we don't want to talk to her. We just want to talk to her through a television set, telling the other guys worse, vote for us. And guess what? It didn't work out. So guess what? Now it's time to do something new. Now it's time to do something new. And you ain't never going to hear Brother Keith talk against nobody else's political party. I'm against any political party, even my own, if they are not engaging the grassroots. It's not a matter of going left or right. It's not a matter of going left or right. It's a matter of going to the grassroots. You're looking for direction? Go to the people. They will tell you what they need. They will tell you this economy sucks. They will tell you they can't make a living in this thing. They will tell you jobs, yeah, no problem with the jobs. I got three of them, all making $7.25 an hour. Let me just tell you, you got to go to the people. We need a government of, by, and for the people. And right now, folks, it's not.
That's right.
But only the cynics say it can't be done. I believe it already has begun. The women's march. The women are leading the way in this country. Thank God for the women. But they were followed up by the nerds. You saw the scientists out there, right? And they were followed by all the people are in the streets more than ever. This is a very hopeful sign. What we've got to be able to do is systemize and organize this effort so that we can take control of our government. Of, by, and for the people. That's not a bad slogan. This government is in danger of being completely monopolized, and I will simply say to you that if you're willing to believe a little bit more and get out there and meet and engage people you don't know and make sure there's not one person who feels completely isolated like we do right now, then we can turn this thing around. But it's urgent, y'all. It's urgent. The moment is now to do it. Thank you for being here, and let's do it.